Blog Talk Radio.
You don't have to go far to find news in the United States. It is everywhere, from oil spills on the Gulf Coast to second primary elections that we're going to talk about during this hour, to just a whole myriad of activities that are taking place. We want to talk about the news. We want to go inside politics and learn what's going on from one of the experts. And I have this expert on today, Chris Harris from Media Matters. We have an exciting show for you, and then we're going to talk about my new book, 50 Ways to Empower Your Life Through Multiculturalism. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Welcome to the show. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and we have lots to report on today. Next week, we're going to talk about the FIFA that's going on, the World Cup that's taking place in South Africa, and I hope to have some edits done so that I can play a very important interview that I did some time ago with a group of educators from Swaziland who are here in the United States looking at our educational system. So we're going to talk to you more about that next week, since we'll take you across the waters to the continent of Africa, first with World Cup and then with activities going on in Swaziland. But today we are excited about our special guest, Chris Harris, who is the Director of Communications for PoliticalCorrection.org and also Media Matters Action Network. And we have lots to ask him, and I bring on Media Matters because they just sort of set the record straight of what's taking place in the world of politics. So, Chris Harris, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
I'm glad to have you on. First of all, I want to just focus on what's going on with this awful BP situation, and what was clearly a corporate accident has now become a government disaster. What are you hearing, and what's the spin that's going on in terms of BP and the oil spill in the Gulf Coast?
Well, first of all, BP is obviously trying to downplay the damage. They're trying to downplay how much oil is leaking, whether there are secret underwater plumes of oil that people don't know about, and the damage to the environment and to wildlife. So they're doing their own PR games, which just are failing miserably. And right-wing partisans, of course, are trying to blame this on President Obama, which is just transparently ridiculous. They're getting desperate, and I think they're trying to distract the public from the real culprits, which are lax regulations put in place by Bush and Cheney and our addiction to oil that makes drilling necessary in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, those are very important points. People have said, and I actually had a conversation yesterday with a colleague in England, and they're heavily putting the emphasis on Obama, and I had to explain yesterday, as I've done before, I said, it makes a comparison between this oil spill and Katrina. And I said, first of all, very different accidents, very different disasters. Katrina, in terms of New Orleans, that dealt with the levees and engineers, obviously, with lax regulations and things that should have been done. But that's a very different accident when you had water that came in and then stopped. This has gone on for, 50-plus days.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no end in sight. So are you hearing the same thing, people trying to make the comparison between Katrina and this predicament that we find ourselves in?
Yes, many people are trying to make that comparison, but it just isn't sticking because, one, BP is to blame for this, not Mother Nature. They are responsible. It went wrong on their watch. And also, we had, 4 or 5 days where people knew Hurricane Katrina was coming, and the Bush administration did absolutely nothing to prepare for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until 2 and 3 days later that they finally realized that this was a serious problem.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Katrina, the oil spill, we didn't have a weather forecaster telling us it was going to happen. It just one day, bam, it happened. And immediately, the Obama administration and the governments on the Gulf Coast acted, and they're doing everything they can. So I think there's a big difference there in that it wasn't predictable. These types of accidents should be predictable, but this specific one, no one knew it was going to happen that day. And Katrina, we knew for 4 or 5 days that a hurricane was going to hit New Orleans.
I think also you look at, I mean, now obviously clarity is things are very clear in hindsight. Now they're pulling up information. People are beginning to talk about things that weren't done right with BP prior to this taking place.
Mm-hmm.
This could have been prevented. So clearly there's going to be a lot of that blame game going on. But from a political point of view, I mean, you're with an organization that looks at the political spin that's being used. What do you think it should be the government's response to just sort of push off a lot of the criticism that is now landing on our president's shoulders, even though he's making a fourth trip down to the area next week?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the spill teaches us two things. One, we need to have real regulations in place and real regulators enforcing them. We already know, and this is further proof, that oil companies will cut every corner just to save a buck, even if it means sacrificing the environment or the safety of their workers. So they've shown they cannot be trusted, and it's time we have real oversight. And I think it also teaches us that we need to get off the 21st century fuels that endanger workers' lives and the environment. It will be good for the economy and great for the environment if we invested in a clean energy economy that would boost GDP and create 2 million jobs, especially now. We desperately need that. And we don't have to worry about spilling wind or sunlight into the ocean. It just is not a problem.
Even here in Massachusetts, we just got our wind project.
The Cape Wind.
That's right, Cape Wind. And, you know, even in some circles, I mean, clearly those who live in Hyannis, even the Kennedy family, Ted Kennedy was not a proponent of this. But, you know, overwhelmingly people said, you know, we've got to do something, and this seems to be the logical step forward. So do you foresee in your political research more Cape Winds popping up around the country?
I think in time, absolutely. I think Congress needs to act now. I think this just shows how much we need this new type of energy. With the coal mine collapse a few months ago and this, and there's been some new oil or natural gas blowouts just this week in Texas, I think it shows that the type of energy that propelled us last century is. It's a little too risky now, and I think we need to start looking at options, both for our economy, for the safety of our workers, and for the environment.
Well, it certainly is. It's extremely expensive now. I mean, I have a minivan that I'm going to have to trade in at some point and get a hybrid because it is just costing too much money in gasoline to drive around. So
mm-hmm.
the cost that an individual end user is incurring is forcing us to make changes. And, you know, clearly we've got to figure out what can be done. We all know that the offshore drilling, at least at this point in time, will have to go forward, but clearly this very deep offshore drilling will have to stop. But so you can't just stop everything and halt things as you're trying to go into alternative energy patterns, but clearly there have to be some changes.
And I do think that drilling offshore will continue, mm-hmm. but I think most importantly, if that is the case, we need to make sure to keep an eye on the oil companies. I think no longer can we just take them at their word if they check a box saying they checked for safety, checked to prevent oil spills. I think we need to, you know, follow up, check on it, because obviously they cannot be trusted.
Well, that's true, you know, and unfortunately, because they don't know when the rig is going to be capped and when the spill is going to end. This could go on for months and months. And as a small business owner myself and a radio talk show host, I'm already calculating what that's going to cost for the small businesses in the area who will never be able to recoup their losses because of what's taken place. So the expenses are going to be enormous.
Absolutely. And luckily, the Obama administration is being an outstanding advocate for the local businesses in the Gulf that are affected by this, and they're really kind of making sure that BP is going to compensate everyone whose livelihood was damaged because of BP's irresponsibility.
Right. And there'll be a lot of follow-up going forward. I want to switch gears. We're talking to Chris Harrison. He's the Communications Director for Political Correctness, correction.org, and also Media Matters Action Network. You're in D.C. What are you hearing? What's going on? We know that the conservative movement is alive and well and very active. And then I want to talk to you about this very interesting Tea Party that has just sprung up, and they're affecting races. So what do you see from inside the Beltway in terms of this political movement?
Well, I think the Tea Parties are definitely an important part of the political realm now. Republicans seem to have embraced them probably more than they should have, because as they've found out, especially this week in the primaries a few weeks ago, oftentimes their preferred candidates, who they believe can win in November, they get defeated by a Tea Party candidate in the primary. So I think that they are starting to second-guess their full-throated embrace of the Tea Parties. I do think that there is obviously a lot of passion, which can be good for a protest, and it can be good for a disrupting town hall meetings. But when it comes to actually putting up electable candidates for office, I'm not sure it's going to help out the GOP all that much in November.
I want to talk about some of those candidates, one in particular in Nevada. Can you talk to us about the race out there with Sharon Angle? Talk to us about what's going on there, and this is the Senate race.
Mm-hmm. Well, the winner of that Republican primary would take on Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, who recently his poll numbers have been iffy at best, and the Republican establishment here in D.C. very much thought they had a winner in Sue Loudon, who was a very attractive candidate, well-spoken, had a good resume. She had a few blunders a few months ago in which she proposed people paying for their health care by bartering and, like, trading chickens. And so that was easy for her opponents to mock, with a chickens for checkups theme. And so out of nowhere, a Tea Party-backed candidate named Sharon Angle actually surged ahead in the polls and ended up pulling off a huge upset on Tuesday. And she is absolutely very far right. She's, as far as I know, the most extreme candidate, definitely the most extreme nominee in the nation this year. She favors outlawing alcohol and returning to prohibition. She wants to get rid of Social Security, unemployment insurance, the Department of Education, Department of Energy, and go back to the days before the income tax. And
800, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I believe, yes, she does believe that abortion causes breast cancer, and has warned about big government concentration camps, and frowns upon families in which both parents are out of the house working.
She's a member of the Scientology group, isn't she?
I don't think she's actually a member. I know that there was one instance where she backed a proposal to have a Scientology massage therapy to sort of rehabilitate state prisoners in the prisons. I don't think she's actually a member of Scientology or a follower.
I mean, she is very far right. She has some very interesting things that she wants to change. And clearly, how is she going to match up with Harry Reid now as a candidate? Because clearly she's very different and very far removed from what they thought the candidate was going to be, Sue Loudon.
I think once Nevada voters are educated on her policy positions, I think they're going to be turned off. I think just as Nevada voters were turned off when they found out about Sue Loudon's Chickens for Checkups plan, I think they will be turned off. And I think hopefully they'll understand that the progressive change that Harry Reid has delivered and led through the Senate this year, that I think they'll realize that they want him going to bat for Nevadans again in the U.S. Senate.
Well, that's the race we're going to definitely watch, and I'm sure Harry Reid is not going to sit back and take this for granted. He's going to have to work like heck to make sure he gets reelected. But
oh, absolutely.
It may be a little easier with this candidate versus Sue Loudon. Let's go to the race with Nikki Haley. Explain to our listeners what's going on there.
Well, South Carolina has infamously dirty politics, as John McCain could tell you from 2000. And as Nikki Haley, who was a close ally of now infamous Governor Mark Sanford, as she started going up in the polls, her political enemies started spreading rumors about extramarital affairs. And some Republican consultants from the state started telling reporters and posting on blogs that they had had inappropriate relationships with her. None of this was ever proven, and very few people in South Carolina actually believed this. And so she was the top vote getter in the primary. Just the way their elections are, there's going to be another runoff election between her and the second place candidate, but she looks very well positioned to become the Republican nominee for governor. And so that was very interesting to watch.
Right. Is there a second runoff because she didn't reach 50%?
Yes. She was just a few thousand votes short.
I see. So, but she's still expected to prevail.
Yeah, I think the second place person had no more than 20%, and she had 49%, so it's pretty lopsided.
Well, that's going to be an interesting – and again, we're pointing out these races because these are women who are in the forefront now. They're winning these big seats, and, clearly dirty politics is in place. And let's go all the way down to Arkansas and talk about Blanche Lincoln, who everybody thought had been written off, and clearly not the case.
Yeah, she surprised me, and she surprised, I think, most people in Washington and political observers from around the country. She beat Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter, who seemed to have an energy surrounding his campaign with the progressive grassroots and just the online community and labor backed him. And so I think she surprised a lot of people, but she ended up catering to Arkansas, and she knew the electorate down there, she ended up pulling off what shouldn't have been an upset, but it actually was. So she's will be the nominee in November.
Right, and I was surprised. Not surprised. She had, with her acceptance speech, she had many African Americans in her back in the background. So clearly, the African American vote came out in support of her, even though Halter got all the support from unions. So, Are you all looking at what happened there in terms of the support he received? Yet the Bill Clinton came out in support of Blanche Lincoln. What was going on there?
Well, we, as an organization, we don't get involved in elections or fights or anything like that. We sort of just observe and make sure that people are telling the truth on all sides. And so we didn't have a horse in the race, but it is interesting to see. I think just as a political observer and news junkie myself, the dynamics of sort of like the Arkansas establishment against the Washington establishment and how they went with the home state people this time.
Right, and we will see what happens come November with that race also.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts about California? That's the last state I want to ask you about. We have a gubernatorial primary and a Senate primary that went on, and again, two women prevailed.
Yep. Meg Whitman, who is the former CEO of eBay, won the primary to run for governor. And Carly Fiorina, who was the former CEO of Hewlett-Packard, not a very successful CEO, but she was CEO of Hewlett-Packard, will be running for Senate. And politicalcorrection.org actually put up a piece this morning on her tenure as CEO, which was nothing short of a disaster. She laid off 18,000 workers and actually admitted she wished she could have done so sooner. She went through a disastrous merger with Compaq, which is it's infamous in business circles for being poorly executed. And she was caught doing business with Iran and keeping money in offshore tax havens, and then was eventually fired for her poor performance after a scuffle with her board.
So, and that So again, you can go to politicalcorrection.org and get that information, because again, she has a lot of money. And the question will be, will the money drive the advertising on television that will distort her record, or will people dig and go to moneymatters.org and go to politicalcorrection.org and find out the truth about candidates like her?
Mm-hmm. And I do think it's fantastic that Republicans have finally attracted women candidates. It's about time, quite frankly, because right now Democrats have more than three times as many women in Congress than Republicans do. But it seems that this year, unfortunately, the women that won on Tuesday leave much to be desired, just as far as their individual views and policy positions.
And it'll be interesting to see the California gubernatorial race with Meg Whitman running against Jerry Brown. You know, he's the comeback kid.
Blast from the past.
That will be quite interesting. Well, in speaking, we're talking to Chris Harris, and he's the communication director for politicalcorrection.org and also Media Matters Action Network. Give us some how you are looking and how you're doing research on the Tea Party itself. How are they positioning themselves? How are they contributing, let's say, to the cable talk show hosts who are then aligning themselves with them, and how does it make your job easier or more difficult at Media Matters?
Well, for Fox News on the other side of Media Matters, Media Matters for America, Fox News has gone out of its way to promote and highlight the Tea Party events, and arguably Glenn Beck helped start the movement anyway. So that has made the job, obviously a full-time job, tracking Fox News and their involvement with the Tea Partiers. On just the political side, I think the Tea Partiers have, at first, were very exciting and energized the Republican base and even the Washington establishment. Now I think it's a dangerous thing to hitch your wagon to if you're a Republican, because they're often not the most politically polished people to put out there as the face of your party. And oftentimes, many times, they have very offensive signs, very offensive views, and are way more conservative than the vast majority of Americans. And I think now, especially now that a lot of their handpicked candidates to challenge incumbent Democrats are being knocked out by Tea Party protesters, I think they're starting to get worried that maybe they embrace the movement a little too much. And as far as our research goes, we oftentimes will show up at events with cameras just to sort of get to know some people and sort of track their movements, see what they're thinking. And we've also tracked the funding of the organizations that help organize and fund. Oh, absolutely. And we found that it really is the exact same organizations that fund the rest of the conservative movement. They're just now paying to print up signs and start rallies. So it's really I think the anger of the Tea Partiers is real, but it's being funded by the Washington establishment. And I think they're starting to worry that it may come back to bite them.
Well, it's going to be interesting as we see that they have the capacity to win races. We'll see what happens going forward. Last couple of questions, and thank you so much for staying on with me, Chris Harris. What's going on with health care? You know, since we've had all of these other things to happen, health care obviously passed, but we know that it's going to be implemented in stages. Is your research showing anything in terms of stopgaps that are being put, roadblocks that are being put in the way so that progress will be slowed with health care?
I don't think there are too many roadblocks now. Like, some people are trying with lawsuits and other kind of risky bets, but I don't think, as far as I know, no serious legal or judicial analyst believes that the lawsuits are going anywhere. I think right now, obviously, the full effect of the law will be phased in over the next 5 years. But right now, in this year, children up to age 26 will be able to stay on their parents' plan. So especially now when it's very tough to get a job out of high school or out of college, it's good to know that kids will be able to stay on their parents' plan. And I think that is outstanding, and it's about time. Mm-hmm. The donut hole for seniors, it will be closed, and I think that's very soon. So seniors will have to pay less out of pocket, which, again, in this economy is crucial.
Absolutely.
And insurance companies will no longer be able to deny coverage based on pre-existing conditions. So if you had cancer treated and recovered, many people before were unable to change jobs because if they tried to get a new insurance plan, they would be turned down. And so now that will be made illegal, so insurance companies won't be able to deny people just because they used to be sick.
Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how that timing is going to roll out. That was clearly a big, big mantra with those who wanted to have health care passed. And now that we look at all these other things that are taking place this year, I'm so glad that in March health care passed and we can move on and get it implemented. What about, just one final question for Chris Harris, what about immigration? Is your research showing anything about the Arizona bill? I'm concerned here in Massachusetts because a legislator has tacked on some immigration policies and practices to our budget, and that was sort of slipped under the radar, and people are very upset about that. Is that happening around the country as a result of what's taking place in Arizona?
The Arizona law did inspire a lot of copycat laws inspire them to be introduced in states around the country. And I think, obviously, on its face, that's a very, very bad thing because that law just went way too far.
Right.
I do think, and this may be wishful thinking on my part, but I do think that maybe this new surge in state-based immigration laws will convince the federal government and Congress to sort of get off their butts and do the job. And I think that right now there are some bills being talked about and introduced that first focus on securing the border and making sure that illegal immigration stops and that no more people come in. And then once the border's secure and we've stopped people from coming in illegally, then we can sort of figure out a way to make those illegal immigrants that are here learn English, pay back taxes, and hopefully they can transition to become productive, taxpaying American citizens.
Right. And there are even Republicans who wanted to have that. President Bush wanted to get that.
Absolutely. And I think it was tough before when to talk about some type of helping people become American citizens when there were still more illegal immigrants coming every day. So I think once we stop people from coming here illegally, just going forward, then I think we can take time and figure out a way to obviously do background checks, make sure that everyone who's here has followed the law once they've been here, and make sure that they learn English, maybe pay back taxes, a tax penalty, and then become productive taxpaying American citizens, because that's really what drives our economy.
And that's a road to citizenship, and when people hear that, it's not a matter of them jumping in front of the line. No, they'll be at the back of the line, whatever that line happens to be, but at least it will be a process for them to go through citizenship, because let's be frank with it, we're not going to round up 12 million people and send them back to...
Oh, absolutely. That people who... I think that is just fundamentally dishonest. And these are generally the same type of people who say the federal government can't do anything, whether it be health care, basically anything. People think the government should get out of everything. All of a sudden, they believe that the government can round up 12 million people overnight and send them back.
Or fly down to the Gulf and stop an oil leak.
Exactly.
Your multinational corporation can't do so. Yeah, the hypocrisy is quite amazing when you look at that. Tell us about, in the closing minutes, Chris Harris, tell us a little bit more about Media Matters. And there's a section on your website that I particularly like. So often people talk amongst themselves, but they won't pick up the phone and either call a talk show or write a letter, which I do all the time. Share with us what people can actually do when they have opinions and they want to have their opinions known.
Yep. Well, Media Matters for America is a media watchdog that corrects conservative misinformation in the media. It focuses mainly on conservative talk radio like Rush Limbaugh, and Fox News, of course, with Bill O'Reilly, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, and they're basically all day on Fox News. So they focus on fact-checking there and making sure that people do not fall for the lies. We also have a site called politicalcorrection.org, which does the same type of fact-checking, but instead of focusing on Fox News or talk radio, it fact-checks members of Congress, outside political groups, and sometimes candidates. But mainly we focus on like the policy and the political issues here in Washington. So, and that is, I think, very important, because right now it's way too easy for people to go on TV and say whatever they want without being held accountable and telling the truth. So I think we provide, hopefully people think we provide that service and help set the record straight.
Well, I would encourage my listeners to go to MediaMatters.org and check out, there's a section of the website where you can learn how to create your letters that will go to editorial departments, how you can call a talk show, prepare your comments. And I think that if more people prepared and practiced for that, then we would have a little bit more, quote, fair and balanced than we actually have today. So, Chris Harris, thank you so much for being on my show today. Chris Harris is the communications director for PoliticalConnection.org and also Media Matters Action Network. And, again, that's MediaMatters.org. Chris, thank you so much for being a guest on my program.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care now.
Bye.
And again, we just encourage you to do your homework. It's just a matter of certainly having a cup of coffee and talking with one another. That's fine. That makes sense. But you have to go beyond that point. And part of that is picking up the phone and making phone calls. I have called very conservative talk show hosts here in the Boston area, but I knew what I was talking about, and I had an opinion, and I was not bashed. Just last week and the week before, because of some activities that are going on here in Massachusetts, I make comments on after an article is written in our Boston Globe. I have an account, and it doesn't cost anything, and so I comment so that my comments can offset some of the other comments that are made on the other side. Everybody has the right to an opinion. We're not talking about that. It's just a matter of making sure that the opinions that are read and heard and seen and comments that are made are ones that are representative of the full complement of people here in the United States, and you are very, very important. And I think what I'm going to do probably going forward is to have a show bring either Chris on or someone else to actually show people the step-by-step procedures that you can follow to either set up your own blog or to comment on a blog or to comment with a radio talk show host or a television talk show host that you do agree with or you don't agree with, or just to make sure that your comments are made. Another thing that you can do is to go to the respective news organization websites. Typically, they have opinions, and they have surveys that they want you to fill out, either yes or no, that you can click through and give your opinion. That's another way where you can let your opinion be known. But I have a lot of respect for Media Matters, and again, I've had them on, so I would encourage everyone to check them out. And please share with me your comments. I love to hear from my listeners, and I love to hear from those who are in my chat room right now. We thank you so much for hanging around this show. My email address is very simple. It's tellcarole, TELLCAROLE, at mac.com, and we would love to hear from you going forward. So we're going to shift gears a little bit. We'll put a little tribute music on, and we're going to talk to you and take you through five different steps that are a part of my new book, and we'll tell you about it after the little music plays. I'm really excited about the book that will be coming out later this year, and it's entitled 50 Networking Tips Tips to Empower Your Life Through Multiculturalism, and they involve 50 networking tips. And I'm going to just share with you just a couple today, give you a sense of how you can empower yourself and how multiculturalism can just be infused in everything that you're doing. This is really based on an incident that took place last week that I'll share with you in just a few minutes. But when you look at networking, you're looking at a group or a system of interconnected people, places, or things, and we network all the time. Sometimes we do it very well, and sometimes we sort of blunder and make mistakes with networking. But the important thing is to understand how you can use multiculturalism and use networking to your advantage so that you can ultimately build and maintain relationships. Relationships, that's really the name of the game and the important component that we want to share with you. It's also important in terms of meeting new people and doing things that will make you a more productive either employer or employee or someone who is involved in starting a new business or an emerging business. It's just a matter of how you can make things really work for you. The first thing I'd like for you to do, and this was actually a homework assignment that I had for our webinar that we had last week with my Ebony speakers, which worked out very, very well, is I would encourage you to find a cultural institution, particularly a religious cultural institution that does not represent your particular faith, if you have one at all, and go and visit. Last week, I had the privilege, and you know, last week's show we did live on site. It was the beginning of the Sudanese Women's Forum that was held with an organization that I'm connected to, and that's my sister's keeper, and we had Gloria White Hammond on the show with us, and Cynthia Bell, one of her board members. Well, that Friday, the conference kicked off. It was very intense and just very important as they resolve some of their issues and deal with peacekeeping issues. We took everybody to the mosque. And I'll give you a little background. The group in question, My Sister's Keeper Sudanese Women's Group, was made up of about 40% women, Muslim women, and 60% Christian women. And another background piece, the Sudanese civil war and conflict has involved religion. The Christians who were attacked by Muslims and then enslaved, and then lots of things happened over a 20-year period of time, and now it's spilled over into Darfur, which everybody also has heard about. Still religious issues, lots of tension going on. So this was a rather risky move, but I thought a very important one, because of the symbolic embrace of the Islamic Cultural Center of Boston. So we made the arrangements and we took people there, and it was an absolutely inspiring trip. It was one where even in my own community here in Boston, we had people, actually there were about 40 women who were participating in the conference, most of them outside of Massachusetts. They were flown in from around the United States and Canada, originally having come from Sudan. And so, again, some Christians, some Jews, and we actually had Jewish women, Jewish people involved in our conference activities, Christians, Muslims, and Jews. The Christians, and particularly Jewish people, had never been to this mosque and certainly had never been a part of this mosque. We took a tour of it. We asked lots of questions. We learned about the garb. We understood how women have to be covered pretty much from head to toe when they enter into the sacred space in the mosque. There is a template up that gives the time in the lunar time versus the Gregorian calendar time, and the five times a day that Muslims are to pray, and the one time a day that they are not supposed to pray. And this was information that was just really enlightening. I also realized and found out, unbeknownst to me, that in the world of Islam, the day, Friday, which would be tomorrow, is like the Christian's Sunday. So Friday is a very holy day. It is a day where lots of Muslims try to gather. It's not as easy in the United States and in Western countries, but certainly in other parts of the world, Friday is a very big day, and people try to race and finish their work on Thursday so that their families can pray and be together on Friday. So that's important. Here in Massachusetts, we're trying to now get policies and legislation passed to make sure that there's not discrimination that takes place in the Muslim community here in the United States. And so with that said, I would encourage you to go to some faith-based organization. Certainly if you are a Christian, go to a mosque or go to a temple. If you're Jewish, go to a Christian organization, and vice versa. So experience someone else's culture through their religious beliefs. That is so important, and it's something we ignore, we don't talk about. It is something I want to spend a lot more time on, the intersection of religion in our cultures and the values that we have. And you can learn firsthand about someone else's faith-based organization just by doing that. So that is tip number one that we'd like to share with you. Tip number two is, if you're on the job, to design a diversity calendar for your workplace. Can be done very easily, particularly now since we have the internet and since there's so much you can look up. I was on the phone yesterday, again, talking with a colleague, my colleague in Liverpool, England, and if you're interested in the various holidays that take place all over the world, you can simply go to the UN and look at the UN calendar. You can Google UN calendar and see what comes up. They will have listed there all of the holidays that take place around the world. So often, again, we get so focused on our own holidays, our special days, we don't realize that in the United States, some of the days that the Thanksgiving, let's say, in the United States typically is celebrated in November, but in Canada it is celebrated in October. I've been in Canada. I remember, gosh, years ago, 10, 15 years ago, doing some work in Canada and speaking there and arriving on what was their Thanksgiving in the month of October. And it was just an interesting experience to see everything closed, nothing open except a couple of restaurants or whatever. But again, if you focus just on your own particular geographical country calendar, you won't know about the different holidays that take place and the overlap of the holidays, too. And the fact, again, when we go back to the religious discussion, when you have religions such as Islam that is based on a lunar calendar, frequently those holidays float based on the date and the positioning of the lunar calendar. Ramadan is celebrated in Islam. Typically it's a 30-day fasting and praying meditation period for a lot of Muslims. It has been in October. We are thinking that in the year 2010, it's going to be in the month of August, just because of the way the lunar calendar operates. So check out, create some kind of diversity calendar. And if you are a supervisor, if you're in HR, if you have some kind of supervisory position, then I would encourage you to talk with your staff members, those who were born outside of the United States in this case, and ask them what holidays make are very important for them so that their holidays will go on your work calendar. So that's your first one. Number two, this is also on the job, is to post employee country flags at work. I'm seeing this more and more, and again, even if you're in the United States and you're working for a U.S. company and you have employees from all walks of life, all stripes of life, it's just a nice gesture, and it's a way to show your level of inclusion to have some kind of demonstration where their particular flags can be flown. I've, again, worked with organizations. I remember working for the TJX company years ago and going to one of their manufacturing plants or their warehouse areas and physically seeing all of the flags on the wall in a particular area as you come in that represented all the people who worked for that particular site. That's a great way to do it. And then I've gone to other organizations where they just take a map. This is a map of the world, and they have push pins, and everywhere where you have someone, if you have somebody who's working in your organization who works in, who's from Morocco, then you would put a push pin on the country of Morocco or France or Japan or Brazil or wherever it happens to be. It is a way, again, to just let people know that you respect them, that you honor their background, and it is just a wonderful way to let people know that you really care about who they are and where they're from. Another, and this is going to be such a fun book to publish because we have so many ways that you can demonstrate your level of multiculturalism and be empowered at the same time. Another thing that I would encourage you to do is to start a pen pal program. Let me share with you how. There's a middle school here in the Boston area called the Timmelty School, and they have had a Promising Pals program probably for 15, 20 years. I participated some years ago, and I know they're continuing to keep it going. And what they do is that they ask people, very busy people, doesn't make any difference, people who have just a little bit of time because we're all very busy, they match them to students in their school. This is a junior high school, so 5th, 6th, and 7th grade. And the whole school year is just based around writing. They just write letters to each other. And clearly now you can do it online. You can have an email trail that goes back and forth. This serves as a mentoring program where you have adults who are then mentoring these young people. These young people hopefully will continue and build a relationship with you. And it's a wonderful opportunity to learn about young people, particularly young people who are different than you are. And, again, the encouragement is to find a young person, find a school, find a group of young people who are different than you are, culturally different than you are, so that you can learn about them, learn about what they're doing in school, and hopefully be a support to them, if not necessarily a tutor or anything, but also just an encourager so that they will have your support as they go about their school duties. Timmelty School does this formally. So, again, they begin the Promising Pals program at the beginning of the year. They match up the adults with the students, and I'm sure that they probably take students on and adults on throughout the year, but they do the matching process. And then at the end of the year, they have a big celebration, and they bring the adults to the school. They have a nice, I think it's a breakfast, and then they actually have a chance to talk at length with their students. They don't necessarily have to go on with the program after the school year ends. I didn't because I got involved in other activities. But it's a way, again, for young people to really have a full year exposure working with and just communicating with adults who aren't connected to them in any other way, and it's just a great way to do that. The next thing is, since we're talking about the summer and I'm sort of bouncing around with the various tips that we have, is to audio tape or videotape your oldest relative and definitely audio tape or videotape their stories. Now, we have the summertime is approaching us here in the States, and for some of you, as in my family, there will be family reunions, and you'll have a chance to get together with your family during the 4th of July or sometime during the year, sometimes between now and Labor Day, let's say. I know that some families get together on Labor Day. Take your video camera, take your cell phone camera, take your tape recorder, but take some kind of device so that you can capture the experiences of your older relatives. So often we think about this and we forget about it and we miss opportunities to preserve our culture and preserve our family history. I did this some years ago when there was a death in my family, and I went to the funeral and went to Maryland and literally took my tape recorder, and I tape recorded my first cousin and my aunt, his mother. And it was a remarkably wonderful experience. They dug up old stories, and all I did, I had a tape recorder. I just put a tape recorder on the dining room table. We had some food, and we just let it go. It was something that was not obtrusive. It was not in your face. You want to make sure, obviously, with older people that they're comfortable with this. So typically in a home setting or certainly with that family reunion with surrounded by family members, that's a way to do it. But it's just a matter of capturing the information from your family that may be lost once individuals pass on. In the case of my first cousin, I learned an awful lot about him that I didn't even know. I learned a lot about my aunt that I didn't know. I learned about her own family and who had gone to school and who hadn't gone to school and who had moved where. And it was just a way to preserve and capture all that information. And that must have been probably 10 years ago. Now, 10 years later, both are gone. But I still have that experience on tape and clearly had shared with the family. We now have access to websites, and this information can be posted on websites. I just discovered and didn't realize that Google has free websites, so you could go to sites.google.com and set up your own website, and they have an actual template for families, so you can set up a website and post all those pictures there and have video clips or audio clips that are there. And again, it's a way of just preserving information that if you're not careful with older people or even those who are ill and you just want to learn more about them, it is a wonderful way to do that. And that can then be shared with other people. So that's the important thing. You can share it with other people either on your job or certainly off your job. Let's talk about technology a little bit, and I'm going to spend, again, more time with this in my book, 50 Ways to Empower Your Life Through Multiculturalism. I'm online quite a bit. I'm sure you are, too. We have guests in our chat room. Hello, you're online as well. And there are ways for you to learn an awful lot about each other and learn about other cultures by using LinkedIn in particular. Now, Facebook, you can do the same thing, and I have probably 1,000 friends on Facebook and a couple of hundred on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is LinkedIn.com. It's LinkedIn.com. Is a more of a business-oriented social platform where you get connected to other people through the people you know. So you connect with the immediate people that you know, and then through introductions and recommendations, you can connect to other people. So it is somewhat a slower build so that you don't find people on LinkedIn that have thousands and thousands of, quote, friends. They may have 1,000 or a couple of hundred or so because the process is a little bit more formal and it is a little bit more stringent in terms of how you can sign up with friends. But the important thing is with LinkedIn, they have pretty good discussion groups. So once you become a member of LinkedIn, you can bounce around and find out what discussion groups are available for you to join, and you have the ability to pose a question, and then people within that particular group will answer a question. Now, there's some groups that are already full. I think the SHRM, the Society of Human Resource Management, that discussion group is already filled. You can't join that. They're not actually having any more openings. But there are lots more groups. There are diversity groups. There are multicultural groups. There are business groups. There are networking groups. There are a whole lot of discussion groups that you can join. There are even groups that associations have created as well. But it, again, is an opportunity for you to learn an awful lot about a particular subject matter, and multiculturalism and diversity or empowerment are on the table. And so I would encourage you to check out LinkedIn in particular. Now, Steve, this is another tip regarding LinkedIn, is to write a recommendation for a diverse colleague. Recommendations are highly sought after, and they are you're at an advantage when you have people to write a recommendation. It's just a recommendation letter that talks about the connection that you have to that person and the project that you worked on or how this person really can serve as a very good professional in whatever field that they're in, and then that is stored on that person's profile. So if someone comes to that person's profile, they can obviously see their background, see their biographical profile, but they have a chance to see and hear and actually read what other people are saying about them. And so that serves a very important purpose if you're trying to hire somebody or you're trying to get business from an individual. My recommendation is that you write a recommendation for someone who is ethnically different than you are. Someone who is ethnically different than you are, and it may be reciprocated. They may do the same for you, but that is a way, I think, for you to demonstrate your ethnicity. Speaking of YouTube, I want to talk about this tip, again, in terms of technology. YouTube, I'm asking that you create videos about your ethnicity. Now, this is how you can tie in the videos that you have collected for your relatives. Why not take that video that you're putting together, that you're creating with your flip camera or whatever, and clean it up a bit, cut it down, edit it to maybe 2 minutes, no more than 3 minutes, because videos now, the shorter the better. A couple of years ago, a 10-minute video or 15 minutes would have been fine, but now you want to do it shorter because of people's time, and people lose their attention span, dwindles, and they move on to something else. So, but think about putting together a very compelling 2 or 3 minute video that shares the story and tells the story about your Uncle Dan or your Aunt Evelyn. And this is the wonderful aunt or wonderful uncle that you connected with, and maybe you didn't know much about it, about that person, but you connected in a very big way, and you create this this video, and maybe you have a couple of pictures thrown in, but it's really nice, and it doesn't have to be really fancy, but you package it together in a certain way, and you put it on YouTube, and it's a 2-minute video, and you create, obviously, an account with YouTube. That is, I think, a wonderful way to demonstrate your level of multiculturalism, talking about your relatives. Maybe you have relatives who came from the old country, wherever that happens to be, and they're sharing their story about what that experience was. It is, I think, a wonderful way, and because we are so visually mindful now, and YouTube is so powerful, think about doing that. Or if you're running a training program, personalize your training program, go to YouTube, pull up, in advance you can do a search, pull up some videos that tell the personal story of someone, and talk about it in the context of the work that you're doing and the training program that you're doing. It is, I think, a great way to do that. Staying with YouTube, I think I'm giving you more than 5 tips, but it's okay. Staying with YouTube, develop a YouTube strategy, so that you subscribe to diverse channels. I even subscribe to the Queen Elizabeth channel, and they have videos about Queen Elizabeth and some of the things that she's doing in England. I found it quite fascinating. I also subscribe to a channel on YouTube that is nothing but news from Kenya. And so they have short 2, 3, 4, 5 minute news reports on news that's taking place in Kenya. So you can pick your country, you can pick your subject matter, but if you are visually mindful, this is a great way for you to learn more and to experience it and hopefully give as well. So we would like for you to do that. One more tip that I want to share with you, and again, we encourage you to join the Multicultural Symposium Series. That is an initiative that I started in 2008. We have about 150-plus members, and you can become a member where the webinars that we do will be a part of your repertoire. They're part of your portfolio. We do a webinar every month. And it's just an opportunity for you to be a part of a group, a community of like-minded individuals who are focusing on multicultural issues. You can go to my website, sign up, and we would love to have you on board. It's just a very inexpensive $99 a year, and it gives you access to our activities, our conference that's coming up in October, also the webinar series and the newsletters that we get. And you can go to mssconnect.com, mssconnect.com, and check that out with the Multicultural Symposium Series. Last, on Facebook, deliberately make friends with diverse people. That's my tip with you. Make friends. On my Facebook page, and almost 1,000, I have Republicans, I have Independents, I have Democrats, I have people of all ethnicities, I have people outside of the United States who are part of my Facebook community, should I say. That, I think, is a wonderful way for you to demonstrate your level of multiculturalism by meeting people online. Technology is definitely a part of the multicultural mix, and I hope that you've enjoyed these tips, and you'll see it all packaged together with the book that's coming out later on this summer, 50 Ways to empower your life through multiculturalism. Enjoy your weekend. We hope that you have a great weekend. We'll be back next week talking about, speaking of multiculturalism and global issues, we're going to talk about World Cup and hopefully have everything packaged together for the Swaziland interview. Take care, enjoy yourself, and we'll see you next week. This is Carol Copeland Thomas saying we hope that you will empower your life with everything that you do. Take care, enjoy your weekend.